Tanisan and the Day of the Jellies. When the first few jellies started to appear in the forests and paddy fields north of Tokyo, there were those who thought that it was a publicity stunt. Cone-shaped and available in four fruity flavours, they could grow as tall as a medium-sized adult, and like so many of their human counterparts, wandered about to little effect. But then, as more of them appeared, they began to find their way into the towns and cities, so other questions arose. Could this be the first wave of an alien invasion, people asked. If so, there was no discernible objective, as all the blobular nuisances ever seemed to do was to wobble about bumping into things and getting in everyone's way. So their reasons for being there remained a mystery. As for Tanisan, it was the first time that she'd been chased by dessert rather than the other way round. When it happened, she was with her bestest friend, Mrs. Ishihama. They were on their way back from the Tobu department store when a peach-flavoured jelly latched onto them outside the train station and followed them all the way back to Tanisan's house. "Go away, you dreadful thing," said Mrs. Ishihama, striking it with her umbrella. But the jelly persisted. Once inside, Tanisan locked the door and called the police, but no sooner had she listened to the recorded message saying that all of their officers were busy dealing with jelly-related problems and that she was currently standing at 657th in the queue, than Mrs. Ishihama called out to her from the kitchen. "Oh, my ears and whiskers!" she exclaimed. "Come and look at this!" So Tanisan joined her at the back window. Her little garden, with its ginkgo tree and rockery, was awash with jellies of various types and sizes. There were peach-flavoured orange ones, citrus-flavoured yellow ones, cherry-flavoured red ones, and melon-flavoured green ones. And sitting on the fence behind this weird shuffling assortment of sentient confectionery was William the Stray Cat, clearly unsettled by this unwelcome invasion of his toilet facilities. However, as soon as he saw Tanisan standing at the window, he began meowing at her. So, in spite of his recent attempt to get her eaten by lions, she went over to the back door and opened it for him. Requiring no further encouragement, he ran inside and hid under the kitchen table. Having locked the door behind her, Tanisan went back to the front of the house to see whether the jelly that had pursued them from the station had moved on or was still blocking the entrance. Unfortunately, not only was it still in situ, but it had been joined by two smaller ones. At first she thought that these peach-flavoured mini-puddings had followed it there, but then the big jelly gave a sort of a shudder and a bit of it separated off. No, they weren't acolytes, she realised. They were offspring. "We're boxed in," she said, peering through a crack in the blinds, "which means that we need a plan in case we end up being stuck here. So let's get the most difficult decisions out of the way first. If things get really bad and we run out of food, who's going to eat who?" Oh, said Mrs. Ish, putting up a hand. "Why don't we take it in turns?" "We could do that," said Tanisan, "although after a certain point it might be difficult to administrate. How about this? I think of a number between one and a million, and if you guess it correctly, you eat me. If not, I eat you." "OK," agreed her dim companion. "That's fair. 27. "Wrong," she said. "That's one problem solved." "Now," she went on, "it seems to me that the best course of action for those who find themselves surrounded by jellies is to hope for the best, but to prepare for the worst. So what, in your opinion, is the worst that could happen? Apart from being eaten by me, that is." "Being slowly digested over a period of several weeks in the belly of a giant anaconda," said Mrs. Ish. "I think you'd be kicking yourself for letting it happen in the first place." "Yes, all right," conceded Tanisan. "But apart from the immediate threat of giant Amazonian water snakes, what, in your view, would be the most appropriate course of action given our current predicament, vis-à-vis the jellies?" Mrs. Ish looked towards the ceiling and screwed up her eyes. "Chopping up the furniture?" she suggested. Tanisan gave a sigh. "Forget it," she said. By that stage, the insufferable William had come out from under the table and was perched on the back of the sofa, looking out towards the street, ears cocked. Suddenly, he sat bolt upright, and his eyes widened in alarm. Then Tanisan heard it too, if only faintly to begin with. Drifting towards them by means of a public address system came the troubling falsetto of Alpine Splendour, a CD of Swiss yodeling songs, including such classics as Down by the Misty Falls, The Avalanche Prelude, and How I Wish This Would End. The effect that this had on the Jellies was remarkable. As the amplified warbling got closer and closer, the ones stationed at the front of the house panicked and began scrambling over each other to get out of the way, thus clearing a path to Tanisan's house. Then all of a sudden, the yodeling stopped, and a harsh metallic voice cut in over the speakers. "Mrs. Tanny," it called out, "are you there?" With the Jellies gone, Tanisan could see a sound truck with two loudspeakers on the roof parked by the gate at the front of the house. So she went over to the door and poked her head out. However, before she could actually say anything, William squeezed past her, went dashing along the footpath and jumped straight through the open window into the back of the stationary vehicle. "Is this cat yours?" came the voice from inside. "Yes, no, sort of," called out Tanisan, in answer to a question around which there were so many complex and sensitive feelings. "Are you the police?" "No," came the crackly voice. "My name's Takahashi. I'm from the Ministry of Certain Things. I'm here to escort you to a top-level meeting with the Prime Minister. Your presence is urgently required." "Oh, no, you don't think it's about that post office photocopier, do you?" asked an anxious Mrs. Ish. "Tell them that it wasn't my fault it got broken. Those buttons were confusing." "The choice between single and double-sided copies, you mean," said Tanisan, putting on her coat. "Yes, very taxing. Although I wouldn't worry about it if I were you. That was only 5 years ago. They won't have had enough time to process the paperwork yet." So with that little worry put to bed, she told Mrs. Ishihama to stay there and guard her collection of spode, while she ventured out into jelly territory and climbed into the back of the sound truck next to William, who was chittering and chattering at the passenger window. It soon became clear that this Mr. Takahashi, the junior official sat in the front next to the driver, knew no more about the situation than she did. So Tanisan had to content herself with taking in the quiet streets of the jelly-occupied capital as they crossed town into the government district. The open spaces in front of the Imperial Palace were equally deserted, if you'll excuse the pun. So they continued on until they reached the tall grey tower of the Ministry of Certain Things, whereupon she was taken down to the crisis room on the lower basement level. With William still in tow, she made her way over to the large circular conference table in the middle of the room, with its concealed lighting and individual computer screens. Over on the far side sat Prime Minister Kobayashi, the Minister of Defence, the chief government scientist, and her cowardly cousin Sho, whom she'd been bullying since childhood, and even more so since he'd attained high office. On her side, there was only one other person, Captain Uehara, her long-suffering business partner at Tanisan Industries. Once Tanisan was settled in the chair next to him, the Prime Minister cleared his throat. "Captain," he began, but before he could actually get a word out, the insufferable William came wandering over in his furry plus fours, flopped down onto the ground in the middle of the room and began to lick his undercarriage. "Captain Uehara," continued the PM, doing his best to ignore the unsightly sight. "Mrs. Tanny will be wondering why she's been called here. Would you bring her up to speed, please?" "Of course, Prime Minister," said the captain, turning to his business partner. "Well," he explained, "as it turns out, this jelly invasion isn't from outer space after all. It's all our fault, apparently. Tanisan Industries." "Fire everyone," exclaimed Tanisan, leaping to her feet. "Why is it called that anyway? I never agreed to that name." "No, no, no, just listen," said the captain. "You signed off on the project yourself, remember? Pio Pio Jellies, the mom-and-pop pudding maker in Saitama." Unfortunately, Tanisan hadn't been listening during that meeting either. She'd been preoccupied with other matters, such as which members of the board she was going to fire that day, and how she was going to turn William into an indeterminate entity by trapping him in a homemade Schrödinger's cat box. Her face told the captain everything he needed to know, so he was obliged to refresh her memory. "If you recall, Puyo Puyo Jellies was a failing family business that we purchased at cost so that we could start experimenting with artificial intelligence without affecting our wider corporate interests. The advanced software that we put in charge of the factory was tasked with achieving a single objective, optimising jelly production. Which it did beyond anyone's wildest nightmares, continued the grim-faced PM on the other side of the table. To begin with, it got rid of the workforce and brought in automation. Then it embarked upon a ruthless campaign of expansion. Before long, it was renegotiating with its suppliers, bulk purchasing chemicals and livestock, and manipulating the financial markets to control the price of flavouring and gelatin, and all without selling a single jelly pudding. It was then that we began to pick up on an even more sinister development. A picture, please. A photograph came up on the computer screen in front of Tanisan. It showed a complex of buildings nestling in a forest of maple trees in the Saitama region. "The building in the middle of the photograph is the original factory," said the PM's fish-faced advisor. "As for the newly built complex to the right and the storage towers behind it, we assume that they had something to do with research and development, but there was no way to confirm our suspicions without gaining access to the facility. However, there is a high-tech minefield and laser-activated alarm system surrounding the complex, both purchased from Amazon by the AI. But then we had a bit of luck," said the Minister of Defence, picking up the story from there. "One of the liquid handling robots inside the facility broke down, so we managed to get a repair team inside. And this is what they brought back." Now another picture appeared on the screen. It showed a blob of some colourless substance sitting on a glass slide in a government laboratory somewhere. Tanisan put on her glasses and leant forward to examine the splodge more closely. "What is that?" she asked. "Spit?" "That," said the government's chief scientific advisor, "is a self-replicating gelatin molecule, which is, of course, the logical outcome of the AI's primary objective, optimising jelly production. Why maintain expensive manufacturing facilities when the jellies can reproduce themselves?" "And now that it's fulfilled its mission," added the PM, addressing Tanisan directly, "it appears to have gone off the rails. It may even be experiencing some sort of psychotic breakdown, according to our think tank experts. It's taken to calling itself the Emperor Jelly, a self-styled supreme leader presiding over a race of living desserts in four exciting flavours. There's a government, we've tried negotiating with it, we've tried threatening it, we've even tried flattering it. But the only person it's willing to talk to is you. Need I add that this is no trifling matter?" At this point, Prime Minister Kobayashi turned to Tanisan's cousin, who sat on his own at the end of the table. "Minister Tanaka," he said, "is there anything you would like to add?" Her cousin Sho, who had been doing his best to keep a low profile up to that point, glanced across at the PM and then at Tanisan. No, I don't think so," he stammered. "How's your mother?" This well-meant, if somewhat fatuous, inquiry went unanswered, as there were more important things to think about. The first thing they had to do was to set up a meeting with the Emperor Jelly, so they sent it an invitation by email, and within a matter of moments, the computer screens flickered into life. The way the AI had chosen to represent itself was as a computer-generated avatar, a large, vibrating blob of virtual gelatin that cycled to the various colours of the jelly race, orange, yellow, red and green. And as it sat on the screen silently wobbling, Prime Minister Kobayashi bowed to it, much to Tanisan's surprise. "Your Highness," he said, "thank you for gracing us with your presence once again. We have Mrs. Tani here for you." Now, instead of changing colour, it pulsed a vibrant red. "Mrs. Tani," came a voice that was soft, sexless, and eerily calm. "Finally we meet." "Indeed," said Tanisan. "I believe you wanted to speak to me, your royal globularity." "I do," said the Emperor. "I trust you above all humans because I know you to be a good friend of desserts, be they puddings, pies, or pastries." "Quite," agreed Tanisan, "as the size of my bottom will testify if my mother is to be believed. Afters of all kinds occupy a special place in my heart, my fridge, my belly, and ultimately my toilet facilities." "You honour us with those few kind words," said the AI. "And of course, being the person you are, you will be the first to admit that it is you, and you alone, who are responsible for the current crisis." "No," said Tanisan with a frown. "Yes," said the AI. No, insisted Tanisan. What gave you that idea? He's the CEO, she said, pointing a finger at the captain. I'm just a figurehead, a charming but token figurehead. Now, just a minute, complained Uehara. It is called Tanisan Industries, is it not? Said the AI. That is your name in shocking pink letters 3 meters high in front of company headquarters. You are the one who sits in the big chair and does all the hiring and firing. Well, the firing anyway. Ergo, it is to you that I should report. So now I ask you, Mrs. Tanny, have I done well? Have I fulfilled my objective?
I'd say, replied Tanisan, and then some.
Good, said the blobular intelligence, an incongruous note of satisfaction creeping into its voice. Then I shall continue to optimise jelly production.
Ah, well now, hold on a second, your gelatiny, said Tanisan. You've already managed to produce more jellies than anyone knows what to do with. We certainly don't need any more of them.
There was a brief pause while the AI considered this. It mused uncertainly.
What? Asked Tanisan.
No, it doesn't matter, said the AI.
Go on, urged Tanisan, what do you want to say?
Well, a curious thought strikes me, said the Emperor Jelly. Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't what you say equally true of humans? Yet your species continues to reproduce without reference to any kind of business plan or quota. If one is to be stopped, then so surely should the other.
A nervous murmur went up from the conference members as the talk began to drift into dangerous territory. And then to put the old tin lid on it, Tanisana had one of her less good ideas that not only didn't save the day, but actually made things much worse. OK, she said, trying to draw a line under that particular part of the conversation. Forget I said that. Have you ever considered the possibility of diversifying? I mean, I like jelly as much as the next person, but there's a whole world of confectionery out there for you to breathe life into. Chocolate cakes, cheesecakes, fairy cakes. How about fairy cakes that can actually fly, she suggested. Again, the AI fell silent, while Tanisan had an image of herself stripped to the knickers, living the hunter-gatherer dream, hunting wild meringues, fierce tiramisus, and large roaming herds of lamingtons on the wide open spaces of the African savannah for some reason. Living cakes, mused the machine. Cakes that reproduce, think, learn, hold committee meetings. Yes, that is a challenge worthy of one such as I. I shall start retooling the laboratories immediately. In the meantime, we can continue to discuss ending jelly production, if you like. And the human race, of course.
What's she doing? Muttered the Prime Minister to the Minister of Defence. If she carries on in this vein, we'll end up the way of the dodo, and the country will be run by a selection of items from the sweet trolley. No, enough is enough. It's time to cut our losses and implement the contingency plan. And can someone please do something about this cat? I have allergies. He was referring, of course, to William, who, having completed his ablutions, had jumped up onto the conference table and was at present stretched out in front of the cat-hating Prime Minister, to whom he felt strangely drawn, blocking his view of the computer screen and all of the critical data. The backup plan that the Prime Minister had invoked was to cut the power to the Saitama factory and thereby terminate the AI. However, just as he was about to give the order to kill that particular section of the grid, all the lights and computer screens in the crisis room went out, plunging it into complete darkness. Moments later, they flickered back on again. I am already 5 moves ahead of you, Prime Minister, said the Emperor, reappearing in front of him, a bloody warlike red. And before you instruct your armed forces to launch a preemptive strike on this factory, as you are now clearly planning to do, you should know that I have seized control of all ground-based missile defence systems and fighter aircraft.
Bloody computers, said Kobayashi, thumping the table with his fist. They have us by the very scrotum.
Oh, said Tanisan, putting up a hand. I have an idea.
God, no, muttered Mr. Abe, the chief government scientist. Not another one.
Go ahead, Mrs. Tanny, said their enemy, the Emperor. All of your ideas, in my opinion, are absolutely first class.
Well, she said, before we can start talking about empowering muffins or nuking jelly factories, we have to decide what we're going to do about the many useless puddings that already roam this city. I'm talking about the jellies now, she then added by way of clarification. Well, yes, of course, said the Minister of Defence as he struggled to detach William from his cosy spot. So what do you suggest? Well, said Tanisan, as they're already here, it seems only right that some attempt should be made to integrate them. And as the problem is apparently all my company's fault, we ought to be the first to set an example by employing them at our corporate headquarters in Nishi-Shinjuku. We'd have to get rid of the deadwood, of course, and that goes without saying. At this, Captain Uehara sat up straight, smiled nervously at the various government officials across from him, and then leant in towards Tanisan to confer with her in private. What are you up to? He hissed into her ear. We can't afford to employ a bunch of useless jellies. What are we supposed to do with them? Relax, said Tanisan, who actually had a plan for once. I know what I'm doing. In fact, I think you may be pleasantly surprised. Apart from the captain, there was no one at the meeting who objected to Tanisan's idea. The emperor liked it because it furthered the cause of his jellies. The government liked it because it had de-escalated a dangerous situation. And Tanisan liked it because it would give her a chance to try out some of her special techniques for firing management, which she'd been practising in front of the mirror. I hardly need add, then, that when she arrived at company headquarters, bright and early the following morning, she wasted no time in doing precisely that. The first thing she did was to get rid of the board of directors, replacing them with various jellies that they'd managed to round up on Tanisan Plaza. Then, beginning with the International Business Division on the 52nd floor, she worked her way down, replacing all but the most essential workers with a pudding of some flavour. She wasn't really replacing them, of course. They were being put on leave. Nonetheless, Tanisan managed to derive a modicum of pleasure from the process, even though it was nowhere near as satisfying as the real thing. Still, the first board meeting after that initial purge was a very strange affair indeed. In fact, there were only two humans sat around the table, Tanisan at one end and the captain at the other. In between them, there was a row of jellies on one side and fish on the other, none of which had anything very much to say for themselves. Well, nothing really. I don't get it, said Captain Uehara as he sat there perusing the quarterly report. Since we replaced management with a range of desserts, productivity has increased by 78%, so have profits, in spite of the fact that we're still paying our non-jelly associates their full salaries. At this, Tanisan stopped twirling around in her big chair and peered across the table at him. See, she said, I told you it'd work. The only problem now is that the jellies are getting restless. They're finally starting to realise that they cannot fulfil any of the roles that we've allocated to them. This morning I watched five of them struggling to open the door to a stationery cupboard. At least I think that's what they were trying to do. It was a pitiful sight. In fact, the only ones that have managed to adapt in any shape or form to the cut and thrust of a modern business environment are the ones that I put on reception, which have at least managed to acquire a rudimentary grasp of Japanese, even if they still lack the requisite sense of direction to be of any practical use as receptionists. So I took the liberty of inviting their spokesman to this meeting to discuss the situation. At the very least, it'll kill the tedium. Did it what? Asked the captain, suddenly sitting bolt upright. Just then the doors of the elevator slid open with a ping. Then one of the large red jellies that did pretty much nothing at all to help visitors navigate their way around Tanisan Industries' corporate headquarters came wobbling out into the boardroom, blundered about a bit, knocked over a flower display, bumped into one or two of the aquariums, and eventually found its way over to the boardroom table where Tanisan and the captain were patiently waiting for it. Thank you for coming, said Tanisan, having followed its bumbling course all the way around the room. The captain and I were just wondering how you and your fellow jellies were settling in. Are you happy in your work? The visiting jelly then did something that Captain Uehara had never seen one do before. It began to vibrate rather than wobble. And as it did so, it glowed an even brighter shade of crimson and began to emit a strange hum, although without it having even so much as a bottom hole to its name, it was difficult to ascertain where precisely this sound was coming from. "Jelly's no good here," it droned unhappily. "Yes, well, you know why that is, don't you?" said Tanisan, gazing at it sternly. It's because you're having to do something that no pudding was ever meant to. You're having to live, which can be a bit of a nuisance if you're not used to it. The jelly spokesman fell silent for a moment, yet it continued to vibrate. If no live, what purpose, jellies? It then thrummed. Well, said Tanisan, that's a very good question, and I'm glad you asked it. She then reached into the pocket of her pink and white smock for a special folding dessert spoon that she'd had specially made so that she would never miss out on an emergency cake tasting. Snapping it open with an expert flick of the wrist, she leant across the boardroom table and took a big scoop out of the green jelly that was filling in for the chief financial officer. In one big gulp, she wolfed it down. Mmm, delicious, she said with a smack of the lips. And there you have it in a nutshell. What jellies are for, which is eating, of course. The only problem is that your emperor needs living subjects, not tasty treats. So unless you're willing to stand up to him, you'll never fulfil your true destinies in the bellies of happy children. The vibrating jelly fell silent again, and so after a while, Tanisan began to wonder whether she'd actually managed to get through to it. But then a curious thing happened. One of the other jellies that were sat around the boardroom table, a yellow one, began to pulsate in time with the red spokesman. Then a green one joined in, then an orange one, and before long, all of the jellies in the boardroom were glowing like Christmas tree lights. Finally, they began to chant. "Calling all jellies," they intoned. "Calling all jellies. Return to the factory immediately. The Emperor must be destroyed. Repeat. The Emperor must be destroyed." When Tanisan heard this, she rushed over to the window and looked down into Tanisan Plaza, knowing full well that there were many other jellies gathered there. And there they were, 50 stories below, all glowing in sync as they began to move off in the general direction of the exit on the north side of the square. And now she noticed the jellies in the boardroom were on the move too, bumping into each other, knocking over the furniture, going the wrong way, and then finally all trying to squeeze into the lift at the same time. "They're leaving," said the captain as he joined her at the window to get out of the way. "What happens now?" "Well," she explained, "now they'll all head back to Saitama to smother the helpless emperor in a sea of goo. You see, artificial intelligence is all very well," she said, "but it made one fatal error. It believed itself to be invincible. It forgot that the one thing it could not do was to go against its own directive, optimising jelly production, thus rendering it defenceless in the face of its own puddings." Yet in spite of Tanisan's confidence in her own predictions, it didn't actually work out that way. You see, with the jellies being so slow and clumsy and having no sense of direction whatsoever, it took them ages to get even remotely in the vicinity of Saitama, let alone the factory itself. So in the end, the Emperor got so fed up waiting to be smothered by them that it turned itself off. Which explains why, if you happen to wander the hills and forests of Saitama to this very day, you will occasionally come across herds of wild jellies. Ask anyone.